Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. And we welcome you to Talking.Golf, your second full weekend of July. Rob Hernandez along with Gary D'Amato. We are sponsor-free this week and into the month of July, but if you're interested in being a sponsor of Talking.Golf, just reach out to Megan Augustine. She's our director of sales and marketing. Her number is 608-320-5018. And Megan will get you connected with either podcast sponsorship, website sponsorship, or a lot of opportunities through our social media channels to get behind what we're doing here at Wisconsin.Golf. But Talking.Golf, we apologize. Had every intention of doing some Talking.Golf stuff last week during the U.S. Senior Open, but quite frankly, Gary D'Amato, it was a long weekend. I think between the two of us, we have about 75 years of golf coverage experience between us. And I don't remember a more daunting, grueling championship to cover than that one. It was one of the first times I've ever walked inside the ropes with Jerry Kelly and Steve Stricker on Saturday. But you know what? That's the mark of a great championship. It really took a lot out of us, and there was so much to write about.
Yeah, there were so many good storylines, not the least of which is Bernhard Langer winning, and Steve and Jerry being in the hunt. Thankfully, we had good weather, Rob. Can you imagine what a week that would have been with weather delays or oppressive heat or, you know, rain and thunderstorms? It would have been a miserable week, but as it turned out, it was a fun, you know, we worked hard, but it was a fun week and a lot of memorable moments to take from it too.
Well, let's start with Bernhard Langer winning. I mean, it's championship number 46, I believe, is the number. What made it significant is moves him ahead of Hale Irwin. You know, I think a lot of people were thinking that might happen at a Principal Charity Classic, an AmFam Championship, a regular event. But he goes out and makes it a major, and not just any major, but it's a major where the previous oldest winner was 57 years old and change. I mean, the guy is unbelievable. He's already a Hall of Famer, but boy, this just cements his legacy as one of the greatest golfers of all time.
It sure does. And when you look at the final round, Rob, he averaged 244 yards off the tee. And I think I wrote somewhere where a two handicap hits it farther than that, but not as straight as that. Certainly, you know, he led the field in fairways hit and greens in regulation and scrambling. And when you lead the field in all three of those categories, you know, you're hitting greens, and the ones you're missing, you're getting up and down. You're going to have a really good chance to win. So he had one of those magical weeks, magical ball striking weeks. And he's so tough mentally that once he got in the lead, you know, it was going to be tough because that guy just doesn't back down.
Well, he sure doesn't. There's a lot to learn then from the way he, you know, took on Century World. He kind of went at it a different way than everybody else, right?
He did. You know, Padraig Harrington went at it the opposite way, bass driver everywhere, hit it in the rough too many times and, you know, never was a factor. And Bernhard went at it and some other guys too, by just focusing on hitting fairways and greens. I think this was a typical old style U.S. Open setup, Rob. And that was, you'll remember that was always the standard, you know, 30, 40 years ago, you got to hit fairways and greens and Bernhard was the best at that.
And a lot of people have asked me, Gary, I'm sure they've asked you what the course looked like. And it was hard to describe the rough because it was so thick. I mean, you and I went out there the day before the tournament and dropped golf balls in the rough. And it was hard to even get a picture to accompany your story about that because the balls kept settling so far down, you couldn't even see them. And that was a tale for the entire week. It was hard. I mean, we watched a lot of guys. I watched Alex Chayka, who's a really strong guy, another German who, you know, has forearms the size of Popeye, and he could barely launch the ball forward. It was a classic U.S. Open that way, and I think when people ask me about the course setup, I start with the rough. I've never seen it thicker, deeper, denser, but, you know, when you haven't played on a golf course since last year, you know, the way Century World rolled out the red carpet and closed down, you know, just for this championship, you're going to get conditions like that.
Yeah, it was very uniform, too. I mean, sometimes, you know, when you have deep rough, you know, you can wind up with some good lies because the rough, you know, isn't uniform. But this was dense and uniform everywhere. So, you know, very rarely, I think, if a guy hit in the rough, did he have a, you know, a clean lie where he could really, you know, put a longer iron on the ball and really advance it a long way. It was usually a hack out, a 100 or 120 yard hack out, almost in all cases. And there was no graduated rough. It went right from fairway to rough. So if you missed a fairway by 2 yards, you know, you were hacking out in most cases. So that's what made it so penal.
I think I talked to someone, if there was a graduated rough, there was a first cut of about maybe a yardstick, and then it was right in there. And that's nothing. And then the other thing, if you go to the other side of the rough, Gary, the gallery ropes really never encroached on the rough, but yet the gallery experience was great, I thought, because it again, when you're talking about 25-yard fairways or 30-yard fairways, if that, and then you've got rough, I mean, you can still be that far away in the rough and not have it trampled down. That's the other thing that was different than most roughs, is that it never really got trampled. By the time you got trampled, you were already in the trees, and you've got other stuff to play around. And I thought that part of it was really cool too.
Yeah, you know, the whole presentation, the course was, you know, it looked great. It looked good on TV, and it certainly looked good when you were walking it. Obviously, everyone talked about the flower hole, and that got its share of prime time viewing. But the whole course just looked and played just, I think, the way a U.S. Open course should.
And we never really asked anyone, but I did talk to someone who's either played Central World for a long time or you know, it made the same observation. The flower hole wasn't as eye-popping as it's been for the general public, but let's face it, you know, this was a championship and not a beauty contest. You couldn't have that much floral on one hole and not be a distraction to the golfers. I mean, you know, these are guys who aren't used to seeing 85 different colors of you know, flower arrangements out the corner of their eye. So I think they had to do something around the tee boxes to make it a little bit different. And then even up and around the greens, I don't think it was quite as vibrant. You still wanted the hole to play strong, and I think it did. It also set up a very interesting 16, 17, 18, which, you know, once upon a time was the middle of the golf course, but now that it's the end of the golf course, I mean, 18 was really strong on Sunday, and I thought that closing stretch, and 17 just gets better and better with that water now behind the green, and it's not quite an island green because you can roll it up there from the front, but, you know, you go too far, and you're in trouble on that hole, you know, when you're hitting approaches in. I just thought the whole way the course flowed was tremendous.
Yeah, and to your point on 16, you're right. There weren't quite as many flowers. I think normally there's 33,000 flowers planted around the tee box going up to going up to and around the green. There were not that many flowers this time. But to your point, you can't turn it into a gimmick where if a guy, you know, one of the professionals misses a green and it rolls down a hill and it rolls into flowers, they didn't want that to happen. They wanted pros to be able to, or the competitors to be able to recover from shots that missed the green. So in that respect, it wasn't quite as dramatic as it is for, you know, normal everyday play. I'm sure they've gone out there and planted some more flowers now around that hole, Rob.
I think so. I saw a couple that, Robin Austin, who's on the PR staff at Central World, and her husband played there yesterday. There were a lot of people looking forward to getting back to playing that, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But, I think either they're going to plant some for the rest of the season, or they're just going to leave it as is and say this is the way they played it for the Senior Open. So we'll see. I think the one thing that was interesting, though, Gary, you know, all those years that we were told never to go into the flowers if you hit one in there, and where do we have a picture of Bernhard Langer with his trophy inside the flowers? He was in the flower bed.
Yeah, but at least he wasn't taking a whack at it. And by then he had the trophy, right?
Right. Yes, exactly. So that was interesting. We should talk about Steve and Jerry, Steve Stricker, Jerry Kelly, really a show for the ages on Saturday. Right down, you know, they made birdie on top of each other four times. And, you know, we've covered a lot of their duels. We've covered a lot of them in big championships. I don't ever remember a gallery as enormous as I saw following them on Saturday. And, it was Tiger-esque from start to finish. And, it was, really almost a Mr. Holland's opus to two guys that have given so much over the last 30 or 40 years to golf in Wisconsin. It was really cool.
It was cool. Yeah. I'm glad we had inside the ropes access, Rob, because, you know, following those two guys, especially when they played together. It was, it was brutal. It was tough. Felt sorry for Bobby and Izzy, who, you know, went to watch their dad and barely had a chance to see him through all the throngs of people. But yeah, it was cool to see those big galleries. I think probably, you know, 40 to 50% of the people on the course were following those two guys at any one point. And deservedly so.
Yeah. And same with Lee Kelly, who, was out there with her, mobile scooter, and, she could only catch a glimpse of Jerry at the turn, at the start, at the finish. But I know that they were proud of the fact that, that those two guys were drawing that kind of gallery. And, and then to have them make birdie on top of each other on 18 was really neat. And then they finished 2-3 on Sunday. I know they wanted to give Bernhard Langer a run. It'll look good in the final record books because it was a two-stroke margin, Langer to Stricker with Kelly another shot back. But, on Sunday, Langer had control of that thing until he finished bogey, bogey, bogey. But, it wasn't for lack of, at that point, you're almost 66 years old. If you aren't leaking oil, you're going to, or running out of gas, you're not human. And I think I would have put him to the drug test. I'll give him those last three bogeys, won't you?
Yeah, he made the turn with, I think, a six-shot lead. And at that point, all you want to do is hit fairways and greens and make pars, because that for somebody to make, five or six birdies coming down the stretch is going to be near impossible. So he did what he had to do. He even said in his post-championship interview that his age showed a little bit on those last few holes. He lost a little bit of concentration. But again, he had the big lead to play with, and he knew as long as he didn't make a couple doubles along the way that he was going to be just fine.
Well, and our friends at the USGA had to pivot from a U.S. Senior Open to a U.S. Women's Open, and not just any U.S. Women's Open, but a U.S. Women's Open at Pebble Beach. And if you're watching the coverage of that this weekend, you're seeing that the next big one on our schedule is 2025 at Erin Hills. The U.S. Women's Open goes to Lancaster Country Club in Pennsylvania next year, and then to Erin Hills. And it brings up the fact that, between all the major courses in the state, Gary, that's the one last thing on the schedule from a national perspective at this point. But you wrote about it this week. Century World, the USGA have a really good relationship. Century World, the presenting sponsor of of your handicap system. If you have the Gin Handicap app on your phone, it pops up and there's Century's logo. They're the sponsor of that. They're heavily invested in the game through the USGA. They're also heavily invested through the PGA Tour with the sponsorship of the Tournament of Champions. And, there's got to be something coming here, Gary, but I think what you pointed out in your story, it doesn't have to be the US Open for Century World to be the epicenter of some level of golf. And whether it's a women's open, another senior open, U.S. amateur, I think, there's so many opportunities for Century World to put on a show like this that, and I don't think they have the ego to necessarily care that greatly about what type of tournament they ever host again in the future.
Yeah, that's a good point. Pete McPartland, the CEO of Century Insurance, said they're not trying to climb some hierarchy where they wind up with the U.S. Open, though. They'll be open to listening to anything the USGA proposes. And as you said, they could, host almost anything virtually up to a U.S. Open. And the only thing that would prevent them from hosting a U.S. Open, Rob, would be, the infrastructure and the hotel rooms. Mike Wan, the CEO of the USGA, told me that they would need at least 1,000 more hotel rooms in the region to host the U.S. Open. So that's not going to happen. But certainly the course, there are tees, back tees. I know there was a back tee on 10 that wasn't used, and there were several other back tees. They could get 300 to 400 more yards out of that course, and it would be still a great challenge for the best players in the world under 50.
So to put that in perspective, 1,000 more hotel rooms would be what? About maybe, 5, 6, 7, 8, average size hotels. I mean, there aren't really any major. I mean, there's a new Holiday Inn over east of town that replaced the one that was there forever near Century World, where they now have a Century Insurance building on it. And, we heard the same thing when the Ryder Cup was given to Whistling Straits. And that was that it's for 2020 if they can get the number of hotel rooms. Ultimately, on paper, they did, but I'm not quite sure how, those numbers came to be. There were a few more hotels built between the awarding and the playing of the Ryder Cup, but then they also roped in Green Bay and Milwaukee as kind of presenting area. And we stayed up in Green Bay. There were obviously there's infinite number of hotel rooms down in Milwaukee. So I'm guessing by the end of the day, the PGA of America was fine with what they had to offer. You just can't invent hotel rooms though in central Wisconsin. And I mean, what I wonder what the proximity to a major airport is. I mean, central Wisconsin airport just down the road, but they've got a limited number of flights every day. And I think they added a couple for this championship, but that's not the kind of, you know, airport that's going to, you know, handle a U.S. Open crowd coming in from all over the world.
Yeah, true. I mean, the players would, a lot of the top players would fly in on private planes and use that airport in Mosinee. But to your point, yeah, the spectators coming in would fly into Milwaukee or Green Bay or Madison or Minneapolis, I guess, and drive over, be a lot of car rentals. And, you know, to the point about hotel rooms, there's just not enough demand for those hotels the rest of the year to,
right,
to justify their construction because they, those rooms would not be filled in, you know, January, December, March, August. So, so a U.S. Open, highly unlikely, but almost anything else I think is on the table.
But it does speak though to the fact that if those things were in place, the course itself could host the U.S. Open. And if you look at the courses, a large percentage of them that they've become these, I don't know what they call anchor courses in the rotation for the U.S. Open. I think that's the term they're using. Century World fits those quite nicely. And a lot of people compared Century World to some of those courses that will be hosting U.S. Opens and would always say, plus Century World has water. And water came into play greatly in this championship, especially when you look at a hole like hole five, the par five around the water, where there was a lot of decision making right through Sunday's final round as to how to handle that hole. Longer went for it, came up short, but luckily drew a lie, and then he turned in the picturesque or the signature moment of the tournament with the shot out of the water, basically, but he was off of a little clump of mud on, you know, near the shore. I mean, it you couldn't ask any more out of a layout, and to me, it says, you know, what happens if Century World were to build those hotel rooms and put the USGA in the position of saying, okay, they built the hotel rooms, now what do we do?
Yeah, and the other point is, you know, I think the first open date on the rotation for the U.S. Open is 2036, if I'm not mistaken. So, and who knows if the USGA is holding that date for a course that they're going to be looking at in the next couple of years, including Erin Hills, you know, which has, as you mentioned, the Women's Open in a couple of years and had one crack at the U.S. Open in 2017. So we'll have to wait and see who fills 2036, but otherwise it's a long wait for the U.S. Open for anybody.
Well, Erin Hills, and then, of course, we're wondering what's going to happen over at the Kohler courses. You can't tell me that they're just going to sit by idly and not be a presence in the game. The game of golf has made it difficult because we've squeezed all the, you know, the three domestic majors in April, May, and June. And let's face it, Wisconsin barely coming out of its winter slumber by then. However, I mean, I think Century World showed that, you know, by the 4th of July, you can certainly have a course in midseason form. And so maybe we're making too much out of that. So a lot to look forward to. Any other final thoughts, Gary, on the U.S. Senior Open and the experience that we had up at Stevens Point?
I think we covered most of it, Rob. It was just it was a fun week. And I thought the media setup was as good as I've ever seen it for any major championship I've covered. I mean, the parking situation was ideal. We never had to wait for a shuttle, which was a 2-minute ride to the golf course. The media center was perfectly located near the range, near the first tee, near the 10th tee. And, everything about it was really, really well done. And I even sent a message to the media relations team at the USGA, thanking them because I thought, you know, from our purposes, it made our job a lot easier the way things were set up.
It sure did. I think that was great. Also, you know, the hotel prices were pretty exorbitant, which led us to try out another Verbo. The Verbo was great. It was a farmhouse in the middle of nowhere, but it had strong Wi-Fi. We could do our jobs. We weren't there very much. And most importantly, that I went two or three different directions coming and going from Century World, and there was never traffic. I just don't know where that many people. And the last day was the truest test. Stopped and got gas in Plover and drove Division Street all the way from Plover to the golf course. and it was like a normal Sunday in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. Having grown up in that area, it looked just like any other Sunday. There was hardly any traffic, and the fans literally came out of the woodwork. The thing that really struck me, Gary, was that between the hours about 10 a.m. and 4 p.m., the course was packed. Either side of that, it was a very quiet, you know, experience. So the ends of each day, except for the final round, there was, you know, a good number of people. But, man, you know, they came out, they cheered, they walked the course, and then they went home, or they went to the supper clubs, or they went to happy hour. It reminded me a lot of, it was a great experience that way. It was a unique experience in terms of that tight 10 to 4 window that the fans kept. But the 4th of July component to it, that weekend of the calendar, reminded me of all the great Western Opens that we would cover with, you know, Steve and Jerry both won that, Tiger won it. You know, it was a great cornerstone to a summer schedule there on the 4th of July. I missed that part, but boy, you could schedule a major anytime over July 4th weekend in Wisconsin. I think it would be a great thing.
Yeah, you're right. You know, I never thought about the traffic, but you're right, Rob. It was just a breeze to get in. The fans must have been going a different route than the one I took, because I didn't encounter any traffic at all in getting into the Century Insurance campus and parking there. And so that's another thing that made our jobs easier. There was literally no wait to get anywhere, which is really helpful. And I also like the fact that Century Insurance gave its employees off on Thursday and Friday and told them, go watch golf on the weekend, and you don't have to come into work on Monday. So that was pretty nice of the company to let its employees out there, and they were out there in force.
Well, and I think it speaks, as it does at the AmFam Championship, to American Family Insurance. You know, when you have two strong companies like that, where you kind of make the right decisions and you get everybody involved. I mean, you don't put all the time, effort, and money behind something like this, and then, you know, make your employees look from the big glass windows at the two corporate buildings, you know, as people are funneling in. That was pretty cool. And and then I think fans themselves were parking and being shuttled from UW Stevens Point, where they have, you know, at this time of year, you know, with no classes in session, a fair number of parking areas, and that's not far away. You bring it to a small area, and it's you're going to have some advantages and disadvantages, but the ability to get to and from the tournament was clearly a great advantage. And like you said, Gary, probably one of the best setups we've ever seen from a media's perspective. I think the fans would say the same thing. It wasn't a very difficult course to get around. And, you know, there were a few holes where it was tough to cross fairways, but nothing that I heard any complaints about. And it was a good overall situation. So U.S. Senior Open behind us, U.S. Women's Open going on this weekend. Mackenzie Hahn, the former Badger, first golfer since Casey Danielson with Wisconsin ties to play in it. Have you been watching any of the carnage from Pebble Beach? And not really carnage atop the leaderboard, but boy, the rest of it is, I mean, Annika Sorenstam really struggled in her final U.S. Women's Open. And, you know, but struggle is a relative term, because a lot of people struggle with that setup. It was the good news, bad news. The good news is we're going to Pebble Beach. The bad news is we're going to Pebble Beach. You still got to play the course. And, you know, there's just some areas of the golf course in a championship setup, especially with the rough, where, you know, you can't get away from the fact that they're going to deal with a lot of the same things the old guys did last week at Century World.
Yeah, I haven't seen much of it. I'm hoping to watch the finale on Sunday, Rob. But, yeah, you know, it's historic for the women. You know, all these championships that have been played at Pebble Beach, the men's opens, and I guess the LPGA, I think, played some events there, you know, back when in the early days of the LPGA Tour forming, like 1950 and 51. I think Babe Didrikson and Zaharias won there, and maybe Patty Berg. But it's been a long time since the women got to play this course, and well worth the wait. An iconic golf course, one of the best-known courses in the world. I've been there for a couple men's opens, Rob. I think you've played it, right?
I've not played it, no. We've taken the 16-mile drive or whatever it's called, and seen the course. We stopped the year that they hosted both. It might have been the last U.S. Open, and there was a U.S. Amateur in there. They were in back-to-back years, but I think what I'm trying to say is their entire little clubhouse area is now like a little boutique mall type place, but they, all the boutique stores for for the different things they were hosting over the next couple of years. And I thought that was pretty cool with all the USGA merchandise already. So again, a rare company that can do that, a rare golf club, or golf resort that can do that. And, it's great, but, you look at this leaderboard and it's very US Open-esque to a degree. Bailey Tardy and Allison Corpuz are going into the weekend, 1 and 2, two Americans. H.J. Kim also tied for second at 5 under with Corpuz, but, you know, in the women's game, these are relative no names. It's, insert Y.E. Yang or insert, whoever, from a major championship on the men's side, Sean McKeel, that kind of stuff. It's interesting to see who's rising to the top. But what we're seeing here, Gary, is, the name that everybody is looking for is, the young lady out of Stanford who just turned professional. And, you know, she is, trying to find her here on the leaderboard, but,
T11.
Okay. And, yeah. And so she goes from a relative, Rosang and, 74, 71, but, you know, it's one of those championships where a 71 is going to vault you, a long, long way up the leaderboard. And it's cool. It just, you're right. I don't know if we really got that sensation at the U.S. Open, at LA Country Club, but, we're seeing because they had a couple of 62s early on and it kind of took the whole U.S. Open storyline out of play. But the Senior Open, the Women's Open, I think we're seeing some pretty good scoring conditions where if you can get hot on a tough course, you're going to make some hay.
Yeah, it is an interesting leaderboard in that you're right. There are some less accomplished, I guess you would say, women near the top and in the lead. But boy, Rose Zhang just being a few shots out of the lead. Well, I guess she's 8 back, but 2 rounds to go. You know, she shoots a 68 or 9 today and on Saturday, and she vaults way up there. Charlie Hull's in the mix. Leona McGuire. So there are some familiar names. It's going to be a good finish, Rob. This is another course that you love to see on TV too, because of the ocean and all the holes that we've come to know and recognize when we see them instantly. We know number 7, we know number 17, 18, of course. So can't wait to watch it.
And the other thing that jumps up on the leaderboard between Haiju Kim, Heiran Ru, and I hope I'm pronouncing these right, Jai Shin, they're all South Korean, and we're 25 years removed from Sayri Pak's victory over Jenny Shishirporn at Black Wolf Run. And again, from next to what we, right up there with what we covered last week at Central World, I think that'll always go down as one of the great championships that I've ever covered in the state of Wisconsin, because you had all the great names of women's golf at the time. And with Sayri Pak's victory kind of opening the doors for golf in Korea. Until then, it was, Sweden was the, with what Annika was doing, was the country that was, kind of encroaching on U.S.'s territory on the LPGA tour. And now it's truly become a global tour. You just look at this leaderboard with all the flags up there at the top, and it really has become the world golf tour for women's golf. And, but it all started, in my opinion, with what happened at Black Wolf Run. And, it was the end of the eras for Martha Nauzi, Sherry Steinhauer, Nancy Lopez. And it was a very much a passing of the guard. And it didn't even encompass the career of Michelle Wee West, which kind of came and went very quickly. And like Annika Sorenstam played her final round yesterday, in a U.S. Open and for all intents and purposes, probably competitive golf ever. And we always will remember her, bursting on the scene, trying to play on the PGA Tour and almost making the cut at the Sony Open in Hawaii.
Yeah, and to go back to Sayri Pak, she was she definitely the Tiger Woods of South Korea. I mean, she is an idol in South Korea, and certainly, fueled that explosion of South Korean golf on the women's side, especially, but also on the men's. We've had some great male players come along in the last 20 years from Korea. It's funny we're talking about this, Rob, because I was just at Black Wolf Run yesterday playing in an outing on Friday, and I was walking through the golf shop and came upon a picture of Nancy Lopez holding the white towel of surrender.
Yeah.
And to your point, yeah, that was sort of the end of the era for her and the beginning of the era for South Korean golf. So it was, I stopped and looked at that picture, and boy, that was 1998, Rob, 25 years ago. It's hard to believe.
It is. So you've got the surrender flags with Nancy Lopez. I think it was Meg Mallon and one other golfer. And,
yeah.
And then you have, Sayre Pack standing in the water on 18, hitting a shot, you know, with her up to her, you know, shins in muck, there along the Sheboygan River and executing the shot and getting the chance to I think she might have saved even par there and forced the playoff. And then of course, Jenny Shishirporn's long putt with her hand over her mouth. There are so many iconic images from that championship, and it'll be hard to ever replicate that. But you know what? We've got 2 years at Erin Hills, and it'll be another different experience for the women playing a course like that with, again, if they can get it and it's going to be at the – I was just looking at the calendar for that year, and it's going to be at the end of May, early June, which will be interesting, but a good test to get the course prepared by then. And no doubt it'll be a great championship. So we have to come back down to earth, though, Gary. We've got domestic events, and we talk domestic inside the state of Wisconsin to cover here in the next few weeks, starting with the Wisconsin Women's State Amateur on Monday and Tuesday. And that's over at Janesville Country Club, correct?
It is at Janesville Country Club. Be a great test for the best women amateur players in the state. That's a fun little golf course.
It is. Played host to the it's interesting. The State Am venue played host to the State Women's Open just a few years ago. And then, of course, the State Am, or the State Open course at Blackhawk Country Club played host to a State Amateur not too long ago and gave us a little bit of foreshadowing because of the presence of Tatum Beck, throughout the week there. And you forget about that, but a really good field, Gary. And then a couple names that jump out, a couple of Badger golfers that, that have really made, an imprint in their time in Wisconsin. Let me just go to the tee times quickly here, because it's an interesting group. Vanessa Ho out of San Diego is apparently hanging around Madison this summer, so she'll play in the 8:10 tee time on Monday in the first of the 36-hole opener with Ava Soleil, who's an incoming freshman. Izzy Stricker, who will be a 2024 recruit, and then McKenna Nelson out of Beaver Dam. That seems like an interesting pairing for McKenna Nelson to get to know a little bit about the future of Badger golf. And then I also noticed that Vanessa Ho in that one and in that pairing, and then there's also another Badger, a couple Badgers in the tournament. So it really looks like they've got a strong field, a good mix of D1, D2, D3 golfers, and then, of course, high school golfers. I know there's conflicts next week, Gary, with the AJGA event at the Legend at Merrill Hills and one other event that junior golfers, the College Showcase. So the high school ranks will be, divided a little bit, but otherwise I think it's pretty much a who's who of the top golfers in the state of Wisconsin.
Do you see many I'm looking at the entry list and tee times right now, Rob. Do you see many? Are there many top high school players who are not in this tournament because of those conflicts? Can you think of some?
Well, I know that Izzy was conflicted and she went with the women's amateur. You know, it's got world ranking points because it's a 54-hole event. And I know that I'd have to take a look at the AJGA thing. And I can give that a look. The Legend at Merrill Hills, the Future Legends Championship. They had two qualifiers one for the Legends courses only, and one for the Wisconsin golfers only. And let me just take a look here. I'm not seeing anybody. So Cassie Pasuik is one. Izzy Stricker was on the list, but she told me she's playing at the Women's Am. And so I'm not quite sure why we're still seeing her on that list. I'm guessing that'll be a WD at some point. So really it looks like only Cassie Pasuik, but Jessica Geiser is the other one. And Trevor Dodd was the Legends representative. Nora Cerrone, who's going to EW Lacrosse and has had a really good summer. She's out of Waukesha, and so there's about three or four there, and then I haven't checked the College Showcase list, but as I told Izzy, I mean, the College Showcase is an event, even though, I mean, it's an event to showcase kids who really don't have their college futures mapped out. And obviously she does as a Badger commit, but yeah. But she countered Gary, and it was hard to counter her logic because, she goes, but it's on the Irish course. It's a fun course to play. And I, you know, how can you argue with that logic? It's, it is, I mean, a great opportunity with what, Dirk Willis has been able to, you know, give to the, Golf Coaches Association of Wisconsin, access to the range for all the analytics. And then, of course, two rounds of golf on the Irish course to test these kids with college coaches watching. I think if you look at some of the names in that, Gary, Abigail Henriksen, a contemporary of McKenna Nelson, would be one. And it is an abbreviated field. Peyton Schmidt out of Jefferson has had a great summer, is kind of on the rise in the class of 2024. But it is a very small girls' field, and presumably because of the fact that this year they just, you know, the way the dates fell with where the 4th of July was, they really couldn't, you know, have it any other time. And so that's what we're looking at.
And it looks, Rob, I'm looking at the tee times as you are, for the women's amateur. It looks like they play two rounds the first day and do not repair. So you play with the same foursome, 36 holes, basically, right?
Correct. Yep.
And
yep.
Then, so then they go to a final round on Tuesday.
Right. And tee times. And then I think it's, I thought that, I'm trying to think. I thought that the other flights would play in the afternoon the first day, but it looks like they're going to be back into the morning session, and then tee times start again. It was like what 7 a.m. or 7:30 for championship flight on that first round, and then 1 o'clock tee times start in the second round. So, yeah. But I mean, you look at, you know, so Bella Conshaw out of Elk Mound is a rising junior golfer. She's in the field. Brianna Kirsch out of Lancaster, Lauren Reed out of Monona. So there's a fair number of Kate Krieger out of Heartland. Nora Cerrone's in the women's amps. So I'm not quite sure how that overlap works. It may be like a Ray Fisher week for the men, where they go from the WPGA junior right to the Ray Fisher, and they're playing, you know, golf, you know, 5 days in a row, and one of those days, a 36 hole round. You and I might have trouble with that, Gary, but the kids sure don't.
Yeah, I would definitely have trouble with that, Rob. I have trouble with 18 holes these days. yeah, it looks like the flights play 36 holes and the championship flight plays 54. So, yeah. So, and is this is the first year of 54 or second?
Second year of 54. And,
okay.
Last year, you covered it last year at West Bend, right?
Yes. Yeah, I think I went on. I went out there only for the final round, though. I wasn't there the first day, I believe.
Yeah. And again, I think it's a nod to the, you know, one of a couple tournaments that's sort of growing in stature. And, you know, last year, Emily Lauterbach kind of ran away with it by six shots over Mia Seaman. Both of those women have now graduated college. I haven't seen Mia play much this summer. I think she's just taking a break from golf. Obviously, Emily on the Epson Tour. So you're looking at Grace Suter, Mallory Schwartz, Elise Hoven, Abby Caviani. Abby Caviani, Elise Hoven, played pretty well at U.S. Women's Am, qualified down in Illinois last week. Didn't quite make it, missed it by a few shots, but, you know, their games are in good form. So it'll be a fun, to see kind of who that next, you know, next big golfer is going to be, and whether they're able to, you know, last year, Grace Suter at 8 over, was the, you know, the one that kind of bridged the gap between Emily and Mia and the rest of the pack. So we'll see how the course setup is at Janesville. It can be very tough. The greens, a lot of dog legs in that course. Greens can get really fast. So it's going to be a really, really good test of golf here these next few days. And then at the end of the week, Gary, you found out the WPGA match play finals are at the end of the week, and that's over at West Bend. So you might be going back to West Bend.
Yeah, it looks like I will be going back to West Bend. Charlie Brown, I'm trying to remember the semifinalists, Matt Sable, Brian Brodell. I'm missing one. But yeah, that should be fun. I just found out about that yesterday. And that's a tournament where the semifinalists sort of agree to a mutually agreeable time and place, and they find a course that will, you know, be able to host them. So yeah, It's going to be a busy week again, but that's what we do in the summer.
That is what we do in the summer. It's it does get busy, and you're right. In that match play format is kind of an interesting one, where you know, they started out at Glen Aaron back in May with a qualifying round and I think one or two rounds of matches, and then the quarterfinals were played between May 10th and June 26th, and the semifinals and finals, as Gary just said, will be played next week. David Bach against Charlie Brown in the first match, and then Matt Sable and Brian Brodell in the second match. And you know, again, we keep seeing the changing face of the Wisconsin section. You know, it's been dominated by senior golfers in recent years with Mike Crowley and that group. And now it's kind of going back towards the younger side a little bit with Brian Brodell. Charlie Brown is now a senior, and he's had a great career. But David Bach, out of the Kohler courses, has really, really had a great summer, and so that'll be a fun one. And then we're up to the state amateur, Gary, and I've already started looking at the field for that. The last of the 12 qualifiers this year, 9 qualifying spots per site for the Erin Hills state amateur. Anytime it's at Erin Hills or Milwaukee Country Club, qualifying through the roof. And I tell you what, it was like Monday qualifiers on the Corn Ferry Tour this year, Gary, with the number of people qualifying at each site. Really fun to see the interest in the state amateur.
It is. And not only the state amateur, but the state open. I just read somewhere, it might have been in an email. I think it's an email from Joe Stadler, executive director of the WPGA, that they had a record number of entrants also, Rob, for the state open, 500. A lot of people want to play in the state amateur and the state open, which is a good thing.
Really good thing. And I did start peeking at that and the number of, you know, you always look at it and see, boy, I can't believe he or, you know, is not exempt from qualifying, you know, because so many people with so many great accomplishments. And sometimes, you know, a lot of the exemptions are based on 2022 performances. And then you get people, you know, who've taken their game to another level in 23 and they still have to try to qualify. So it will be fun. It'll be a long week next week. But, you know, as Gary said, that's what we do this time of year. We get to get out and cover the best golf tournaments in the state of Wisconsin. Our window is very short. I'll say this though. It's 114 down here in Arizona. I played golf twice since I've been back, and I'm still not as hot as I was inside the ropes for Kelly and Stricker on Saturday at Century World. I got done with that, Gary. I almost had to change shirts. It was such a hot, sticky Saturday at Century World. So I still think you got the harder, you know, draw playing golf in warm, sticky weather versus dry, hot weather here.
Yeah. And, you know, and you're walking fast to try to keep up with the players who walk fast down the middle of the fairway for the most part. We're walking in the rough and walking around bunkers. And, it's tough. It was, it's a good workout. And then I got to play, I should mention, Rob, that the day after the senior open ended, I got to play the Lido, the new private course up, at Sand Valley, and just had a tremendous time. Tough walk though. You know, there's no shade on the course. It was in the mid 80s and a lot of time you're walking through sand blowouts, you know, between holes. So it's a tough walk, but it was a really great experience and a, you know, a fun golf course that's getting all kinds of accolades and deservedly so.
And we think we'll see that course show up on a state amateur rotation at some point. And, you know, with the great experience we had at Sand Valley last year for the state am, boy, what a treat it would be for golfers to be able to go back there. I think that'll be another one you can add to the one, you know, the list of courses that'll, you know, take the qualifying numbers through the roof again. And, in Sand Valley, Erin Hills, Milwaukee Country Club, the Kohler courses. I mean, we're spoiled here in Wisconsin, and we'll have to talk more about the Lido next week, Gary. And, in the meantime, enjoy your weekend and maybe put your feet up in front of the TV watching that Women's Open. And of course, the John Deere Classic, down in Silvis, Illinois. I think the John Deere Classic has become the future of the PGA Tour on display. And this Lucas Aberg that we've seen on the TV set the last couple of weeks coming out of college is one of these guys that's in the mix. But there's a bunch of them, you know, the John Deere Classic does such a great job of awarding exemptions to kids coming out of college. So we can't forget about the John Deere Classic, but it's kind of the calm before the next storm of golf activity.
It is, Rob, and I'm, and in a way, I have to thank Steve Stricker for not entering the John Deere Classic this year, because I got a media credential just in case. And, you know, knowing Steve, he would have been in contention this weekend, and I'd have driven down to Quad City. So thanks for not entering this year, Steve. Appreciate it.
Well, and you bring up a good point. It's next week's the Calling Championships, which is the old Senior Players Championship, and another major, the last domestic major on the Senior Tour that Steve and Jerry will be playing in. But with the Scottish Open, now a PGA Tour sanctioned event, they have the Barbasol Championship as the opposite field event. And I was looking at the field for that, Gary, and Steve is like the sixth alternate. I didn't realize that he had alternate status on the PGA Tour, and that he actually has to write for an exemption to get into these events. It seems kind of counterintuitive, but I can guarantee you he'll be at the Colleague and not at the Barbasol. And yes, I think everybody needed a break this weekend, so it's a good thing that he's not trying to threaten history in the PGA Tour after his close call at Central World. So let's celebrate that, and then look forward to Steve and Jerry getting back in the mix next week, and we'll do this again next week. How's that sound, Gary?
Sounds good, Rob. Thank you.
All right. For Gary, I'm Rob. Talking.Golf. Again, if you want to sponsor anything here on Wisconsin.Golf, or if you want to be a Talking.Golf presenting sponsor, just reach out to Megan Augustine, our Director of Sales and Marketing. You can reach her at 608-320-5018. Until next week, I'm Rob. He's Gary. We'll talk golf again very soon.